the weekly radio show dedicated to discussing the many issues surrounding mandatory common ownership development. It is broadcast live from WEBR Fairfax, Virginia. Join us as we explore the world of common ownership development, the fastest growing form of residential development in America today. This housing concept includes condominiums, cooperatives, and both attached and detached single family homes that are part of a mandatory homeowners association. Unfortunately, this type of housing is not as utopian as its advocates would have us believe. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means giving up part of the American dream. It means giving up constitutional rights and control over one's most valuable asset, one's home. Living in a mandatory homeowners association means leaving the American zone. I am thrilled and delighted that my old buddy Frank is in the studio with me here today. Hi, Frank. Thanks for joining us.
Always fun, Shu.
Yes, it is always fun. And you know what? You have a number of fans out there, and they're all looking forward to hearing you, and a lot of them love some of the voices you do, but most of all, what you're going to give them is information, Frank, that they're not going to get anywhere else, certainly not on CAI's website, where they can go in and read all the lawsuits where the associations have won. Here they get the lawsuits where the homeowners have won, right?
That's what we try to do.
Yes, we do. And we're going to talk about two particular cases today.
Yes, two very important cases that don't get the attention that they deserve. In fact, when we talk about the Foley case out of Rhode Island, it's interesting. Nowhere in any of the CAI materials is there any reference to the Foley case. For all you'd be able to find from CAI, there is no such case. You go to the website of the New England chapter of CAI, not there. You go to the main CAI webpage, not there. We've asked people up in New England about the Foley case. I know when you had Stephen Marcus, who's out of Braintree, Massachusetts, about the Foley case, he kind of, the Foley case?
What
could that be? And it's a very, very important case on a constitutional issue based on the Rhode Island Constitution. But as we'll see, the Rhode Island Constitution is very similar to the Constitution in Virginia, and I would bet to the Constitution in the state where you listeners may be listening in from, whatever state that may be.
Well, dig out a copy of your state constitution and follow along with us, because Frank's going to give us a whole lot.
We'll tell you where to look, and we'll tell you what the key issue is, and then you'll be able to be better informed. Then you want to write down the citation of this case if you're involved in an issue with your homeowners association that involves an attempt to levy a fine on you. Then you want to pay close attention, because giving a homeowners association the authority to fine may be unconstitutional in the first place.
Well, you're going to give them the citation. I'm delighted to be able to tell my listeners, Frank, that we've uploaded both of these cases that we're going to be talking about today on my website, on thecommons.com. You can go there and go to the links section, and you will see a link to both Gilman and Foley, and you can download it. And if you're being fined, and if you've got an attorney, make sure your attorney gets a chance to see that, see these cases, right, Frank? Is that how it works?
That's how it works, because unfortunately we don't have a state agency in Virginia yet, and Virginia is not unique in this. We don't have state agencies that are empowered to curtail abuses by homeowners association. There's no oversight by a real government, notwithstanding the fact that the legislatures have been given these associations governmental powers hand over fist.
Actually, in Virginia, we have, I think, an ombudsman, and I think the ombudsman's sole responsibility and duty is to say, oh, but you agreed, and we're paying for that.
Oh, yeah, we're paying for that. And here in Fairfax County, if you call the Office of Consumer Protection and try to get treated an HOA issue treated as a consumer protection issue, you'll be referred to a fully paid liaison guy for CAI. And, you know, the Fairfax County taxpayers are paying for that type of buffoonery. And, you know, but the pendulum is beginning to change, as we'll see later on in the show.
Yes, we will. Well, Frank, you want to tell us a little bit about the two cases that you've got? Actually, you've got three cases today that you want to tell us about, right?
Well, we'll talk about Gilman, and then we'll talk about really the two opinions in the Foley case.
Okay.
They're equally important. But Gilman was a 1982 case in Virginia, and the citation to Gilman is... it's a Unit Owners Association of Build America -1 versus Gilman, spelled G-I-L-L-M-A-N. The citation is 292 Southeast 2nd, 378. Again, 1982. And what happened in the Gilman case was that the association attempted to impose a fine on Mr. and Mrs. Gilman because they had smelly trucks. And the case reached the Virginia Supreme Court on the issue of the constitutionality of imposing such fines. And the Virginia Supreme Court had no problem whatsoever in overturning the fines on both federal and state constitutional issues. What they said was that the power to fine is a governmental power, and the sovereign may not be preempted of this power. That's very powerful language. They went on to say that, you know, this case beautifully illustrates the mischief that could be done. They use that word, mischief, that could be done were it constitutional for associations to fine people. It's interesting how CAI approached this. We have here a letter written by a Mr. Kenneth E. Chadwick. And this was published in a CAI blurb of some kind. I don't know if it was Common Ground or someone of their other publications. I'm going to take a few minutes to read it to you.
Okay.
Mr. Chadwick says, newspaper articles and letters to the editor in the area's major newspapers have raised issues related to the validity of a condominium or property owners association's, quote, fining power, unquote, for violations of the association's restrictions or rules or regulations. In particular, one letter to the editor from a local attorney commented on the Virginia Supreme Court's 1982 decision in Unit Owners Association of Build America -1 versus Gilman, 292 Southeast 2nd, 378. That particular attorney indicated that the Virginia Supreme Court in the Gilman decision ruled that it is, quote, not constitutionally permissible for a condominium association to levy fines or exact penalties, unquote. Obviously, before initiating any enforcement action, including the assessment of charges for violations within a community association, the board of directors should check with its legal counsel, well, what a surprise, to determine the scope of the association's enforcement power before scrapping any due process policy resolution currently on the books. Let's look at the Gilman case in its true historical perspective. First, it is important to understand that Gilman was decided by the court in June 1982 based on the provisions of the Condominium Act then in effect. Subsequent to the Gilman decision in July 1982, and in large part as a result of the issues raised by that case, an amendment to Section 55-79.80B2 of the Virginia Condominium Act became effective. That section, now Section 55-79.80 and comparable provisions in the Virginia Property Owners Association Act, Section 55-513B, expressly allow associations, quote, to the extent the condominium instruments or rules duly adopted pursuant thereto, expressly so provide, to assess charges against any unit owner for any violation of the condominium instruments or the rules or regulations promulgated pursuant thereto, unquote. The amendment further provided that certain due process safeguards must be provided to the violating owner prior to the imposition of a charge. Let me just stop there for a minute, Hugh. The POA doesn't even use the words due process, and I don't think that's a mistake. I don't think that was a coincidence that they don't use those words, because that would raise the interesting question of due process before whom.
That's right.
But we don't want to digress here from Mr. Chadwick's letter.
All right.
Therefore, subsequent to Gilman, there was a significant statutory change which altered the legal landscape upon which Gilman had originally been decided. Second, the court in Gilman spends most of the time in the portion of the decision dealing with fining commenting on the fact that the Condominium Act, at least at the time of the decision, did not expressly authorize the Board of Directors with the power to levy fines to compel compliance. Rather, the court narrowed the association's enforcement options to those found in Section 55-79.53 of the Act, which basically says an association, just like any other party to a contract, can bring a lawsuit if they think the other party to the contract is in violation. The court does not make, or the court does make, a broad and unsupported pronouncement that, quote, the imposition of a fine is a governmental power, unquote, which, quote, cannot be delegated or exercised other than in accordance with the provisions of the constitutions of the Virginia, of the United States and of Virginia, unquote. Well, nice of Mr. Chadwick to note that the court did make a significant constitutional mention there.
But it was unsupported, Frank.
Well, yes, unsupported in the in the view of Mr. Chadwick.
That's right.
This is the Supreme Court of Virginia that we're talking about, but we'll get to that in a minute. Nonetheless, by enacting the amendment, providing the association with the ability to assess charges if certain, quote, due process, and I wonder where that quote comes from, due process, safeguards are met, the state legislature has arguably, in the words of Mr. Chadwick, expressly delegated a similar, quote, governmental power. Is it just a governmental power, or is it maybe a power that's vested in a specific branch of the government? But we'll get to that in a minute. As an administrative process to the association in a constitutional fashion. Accordingly, as long as the association functions within the parameters established by the statute and in accordance with due process requirements, again, due process, what a concept.
There we go.
But the POA doesn't mention those words, due process, anywhere, and if it did, the problem would arise of due process before whom? The association should be acting within the letter, spirit, and the intent of the law, according to Mr. Chadwick. Mr. Chadwick goes on, finally, as a practical matter, this, quote, administrative process, unquote, serves as a necessary and vital function for the needs of association living.
Oh, yeah.
That is, it provides a forum for dealing with infractions better dealt with by neighbors in the neighborhood in which they coexist, rather than having to make a, quote, federal case, unquote. And those are just Mr. Chadwick quoting a federal case, you see, out of every violation. As long as the procedural and substantive, what, due process,
there you go again,
safeguards are met, this method can and should be an effective one for dealing with association problems. This method of enforcement also serves to limit the number of, quote, dog, unquote, cases from further clogging the court dockets. And aren't we all concerned about that, Sue?
Oh, we certainly are. We'll just have to keep our dogs out of court
now. Mr. Chadwick goes on, there may be opportunities for abuse from time to time. However, it is this author's position that the abusive cases are in the minority. What are they, Shu? They're isolated incidents. In addition to being the only ones you read about in the paper because they make good copy, Mr. Chadwick says. Mr. Chadwick concludes, after all, it has been 10 years since the condominiums have had this, quote, new, unquote, power. And in spite of the periodic complaints in the newspaper, it would appear that this power has been used responsibly. Otherwise, would the Gilman decision continue to be the only reported case on this issue in Virginia?
Oh. Well, that's Mr. Chedwick, a good question.
That's
now,
a good question,
right?
Mr. Chedwick, because I would think that maybe CAI would be interested in having Gilman specifically overruled, wouldn't they?
No kidding. But yes. they've already overruled mm-hmm. it.
Well, anyway, that was published by a CAI journal in March 1993. Now I'm going to read you something that wasn't published. This is a letter written May 17th, 1993.
Although they had every opportunity to publish it.
They had every opportunity to publish it because it was addressed to Catherine McCabe, PCAM, editor of Quorum, the Community Associations Institute, Washington Metropolitan Chapter, Post Office Box 11846, Alexandria, Virginia. And it's in response to Mr. Ken Chadwick's article in, quote, News Scan, unquote, of March 1993. Dear Editor McCabe, Mr. Chadwick's avowed purpose in his March 1993 article in News Scan of, quote, putting the Gilman case in perspective, unquote, is a worthy and necessary one. Unfortunately, however, due to his faulty research, Mr. Chadwick does a disservice to your readers by repeating unfounded assumptions which could end up costing those relying upon his analysis a good deal of money in terms of court sanctions and damage awards. Mr. Chadwick's glaring errors will be addressed in detail below in the order in which they appear in his article. As a preliminary note, I believe it is useful for your readers to know that the writer here is the, quote, local attorney, unquote, Mr. Chadwick referred to in passing at the beginning of his article, and is the attorney who argued and won the Gilman case.
Yay.
Mr. Chadwick's first error is that the Virginia legislature amended the Condominium Act to cope with the decision in Gilman. Had Mr. Chadwick cared to check out his facts, he would have learned that the amendment purporting to confer the authority to levy fines on condominium associations was passed in the regular, early 1982 session of the General Assembly and was signed by then-Governor Robb on April 1st, 1982, to become effective as all non-emergency legislation on July 1st, 1982. The oral argument in Gilman before the Virginia Supreme Court did not take place until April 27, 1982, almost 3 1/2 weeks later, with the decision being handed down on June 18, 1982. The point here is that there was no causal relationship between the Gilman decision and the Condominium Act amendment. But while there was no causal relationship, the Gilman case did affect the condominium amendment by rendering it, quote, dead on arrival, unquote. The reason for this effect, and which Mr. Chadwick chooses to ignore in his article, is that the portion of the Gilman decision ruling fines by condominium associations impermissible was based on constitutional considerations in both the Fairfax County Circuit Court case and in the Virginia Supreme Court decision. Anyone who reads the Gilman case will easily see that the decision of Virginia's High Court went not to a mere failure of statute, but to the inherent power of the General Assembly to delegate the governmental fining power under the Virginia and federal constitutions. Unconstitutional delegation of power is what Mr. Goldbecker is talking about.
And like most, can I interrupt you here for just a second? Like most cases that we hear about, most constitutional cases based on state constitutions, this one doesn't limit itself to the state. This goes to the federal constitution.
He also invoked the United States Constitution and the Constitution of Virginia. That's right.
And so basically this typically should cover every other state in the country, right, Frank?
Well, any other state in the country in which the state Supreme Court construes the federal constitution the way the Virginia Supreme Court did, yes.
Okay. Thank you. I just wanted to make that, understand that.
But the most salient point, as we'll see when we get to the Foley case, relies on the Virginia Constitution and the constitutional provisions for separation of powers.
Okay.
The legislature can't delegate a power that the legislature doesn't have to delegate.
That's true.
Mr. Goldbecker goes on, one quasi-humorous passage in Mr. Chadwick's letter is when, by innuendo, he takes the Virginia Supreme Court to task for having made a, quote, broad and unsupported pronouncement, unquote, on the constitutional limitations of delegating the governmental fining power. While Mr. Chadwick and I, as attorneys, have to support our arguments before any court, the Virginia Supreme Court is the ultimate and final authority on Virginia constitutional questions. And even the United States Supreme Court can't reverse its interpretations thereof. Like the legendary 800-pound gorilla, which can sleep wherever it wants, the Virginia Supreme Court does not need to cite supporting authority for its interpretations of the Virginia Constitution.
Don't you learn that in law school, Frank?
I did.
Oh, okay.
One need not be a lawyer to understand how the delegation of governmental fining power violates the constitutional due process. In a, quote, fining proceeding, unquote, the complaining party is the condominium association. And the, quote, tribunal, unquote, as it is called in the Condominium Act, is composed of members of the association. All one has to do is stop, think, and ask themselves the question of whether there is anything wrong about accusers sitting as judges.
Yeah, not if you live in an association.
I don't know. As another example, let's assume the condominium association is suing a unit owner for collection of money and the unit owner requests a jury trial. Does anyone, including Mr. Chadwick, seriously believe that any member of the condominium association bringing the suit could sit on the jury?
Good question.
In other words, Mr. Goldbecker is asking the question, due process before whom? Mr. Chadwick's remarks lauding the expediency of the, quote, fining, unquote, method are in many ways more dismaying to me than his failure to research his subject. Mr. Chadwick finds this method, quote, a forum for dealing with infractions better dealt with by neighbors rather than having to make a federal case out of every violation, unquote. He also lauds this method as limiting the number of, quote, dog, unquote, cases from further clogging the court dockets. Indeed, if an accused raises an objection based on constitutional rights being infringed, this is making a federal case out of the matter. And what is wrong with that? More interestingly, what is Mr. Chadwick afraid of? As to, quote, dog, unquote, cases, I assume he is not talking about matters involving canines, but about non-headline-grabbing cases. Apart from questioning Mr. Chadwick's curious concern about court administration, I ask him to consider who makes the dog case what it is. Is it the property owner enjoying their constitutional rights, or is it the megalomaniac association attempting to infringe upon those rights? Also, Mr. Chadwick, where have you found this line of demarcation between supposedly worthy and dog cases? And how do you define it? Simply put, to defend the fining method on grounds of simplicity and expediency is the same rationale used by the lynch mob and by every tyrant in history who has taken power by trampling the people's constitutional rights. Mr. Chadwick's closing remarks in support of his position, in which he rhetorically asks, why Gilman is the only reported Virginia decision regarding fines, is inside-out logic. The reason Gilman is the only reported decision is because it's the law and has been applied by the courts, and the Virginia Supreme Court, despite applications for appeals, has refused to grant such appeals. Put another way, the operative question is, if Mr. Chadwick's analysis is correct, why hasn't the Virginia Supreme Court granted an appeal to reverse Gilman and proceeded to overrule it? Rest assured that anyone who follows the policies advocated by Mr. Chadwick, whether in regard to condominiums or homeowners associations, and runs up against someone ready to go to court, can expect to face monetary sanctions for frivolous pleadings. And if they're foolish enough to file a lien based upon fines, a very expensive action for slander of title. Sincerely, Frederick H. Goldbecker.
Very good. Now, unfortunately, we're the only ones who are bringing this particular letter to light, because although it was sent to Quorum Magazine, which is the Virginia chapter, CAI chapter magazine, it was never published, was it?
Well, they can't publish every little letter, Sue, you know.
Oh, come on. You know. Can we leave such erroneous stuff sitting out there?
Well, you know, anything that doesn't toe the CAI party line isn't going to make it into the hallowed pages of Quorum Magazine or any other CAI journal.
Well, thank you for bringing that to us, Frank, because I think it's important. And I think I know I've had a lot of questions over time about Gilman, and since, you know, why is it that in Virginia we're still fining, and you know, what happened pursuant to that? And I think this gives a very good explanation on the legal aspects of all of this.
Well, as to why in Virginia associations are still, well, I don't know to what extent they are fining, but what CAI lawyers have said across the state is the same thing that one of our CAI lawyers said. When the board asked him about fining people, and his response, which both of us saw because we were on the board, was essentially on this is just about a word for word quote. My advice is that you continue to fine people if that's what you want to do, and then if you're challenged, you can make a decision based upon what were the magic words, you remind me,
the economics
of the litigation.
See, I don't know, Frank. I guess we've really forgotten all this stuff, haven't we?
Yeah. So, you know, if you run into somebody who knows what they're doing, as Mr. Goldbecker pointed out at the end of his article, then the association can head for the high grass. And that's what's going to happen. Either that, or they're going to revisit the issue in the Supreme Court of Virginia, and then the Supreme Court of Virginia will take a look at what happened in Rhode Island, and they'll say, oh, yeah, you know, we said it was a unconstitutional delegation of a governmental power. Now let us be more explicit. It was an unconstitutional delegation of a judicial power by the legislature. And the legislature can't delegate powers that belong to the judiciary.
Can the judiciary delegate powers?
Well, I guess they could, you know, delegate something if they, you know, if they've got a power that they can do it. But, you know, the Virginia House of Delegates and the Virginia governor, if they want to change the Virginia Constitution, Article 3, which is division of powers, and Article 6 on the judiciary, the way to do that is to amend the Constitution of Virginia.
Just let me remind you that On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions, and as of this morning, we have the Gilman and Foley cases posted to the website, onthecommons.com. You can go and download them, go to the links page, and you'll find them there. But right now, we're going to take just a short break, and we'll be back in a couple of minutes. Stay with us, please. Thank you.
Finally bought my dream home to enjoy retirement life. I've made new friends and buddies, lots of parties for my wife. It seemed that life was perfect, all my neighbors felt the same. Then along came death by CCRs, life's over, I'm fair game. Those petty rules and regulations, it's enough to make you cry. They're full of woes, no pink flamingos, someone tell us why. Slick managers and lawyers slither close, but they won't tell why our dream home should remind us we bought a one-way ticket to hell.
In the land of the free, in the home of the brave, an American flag flying proudly for all to see brings tears to the eyes of anyone who fought to defend this great country. Flying the flag is a privilege that every patriotic American holds dear to their heart. It is a tribute to those who died believing freedom was more valuable than life. H.H. Hunt, the developer of the Wyndham community of Richmond, Virginia, doesn't believe the residents of Windham have the right to fly their flag without his approval. H.H. Hunt took Richard Olden, a decorated combat veteran, to court for flying the American flag in a manner that Hunt considered a visual nuisance. This is a sad event in our history. We urge you to contact your elected officials. Call the governor, lieutenant governor, the speaker of the Virginia House, your state senator, and your state delegate. Tell them that you'll not allow H.H. Hunt or anyone else to take the right to fly our flag in a respectful manner away from us. Do it today.
Visit us at AmericanFlagTrial.com.
WEBR Fairfax Radio, you're on the Commons. I'm Sue Bartholomew, and on the Commons with me today, I'm thrilled to have to announce is my old buddy Frank Short. Just quickly before we get back to the program, I wanted to remind you that On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions, but also check out our website, www.onthecommons.com. We have added links to the two cases that Frank is going to be talking about today, Gilman and Foley. If you go to our links page, you will see them. And so if you're being fined and if you need to have a copy of these lawsuits, be sure to download them. Be sure that your attorneys know about them, and be sure to know what your rights are, because if you don't, you'll lose them. Right, Frank?
Yeah, you will.
Frank, you want to give us a very brief recap of what we talked about at the beginning, and then I know you're going to go on to yet another case.
Yeah, we talked about the 1982 Virginia Supreme Court ruling in Unit Owners Association versus Gilman, which held in pertinent part that the power to fine is a governmental power, that the power can't be delegated other than in accordance with the Constitution of Virginia. And the Constitution of Virginia, Article 3 reads in pertinent part, "The legislative, executive, and judicial departments shall be separate and distinct so that none exercise the powers properly belonging to the others, nor any persons exercise the power of more than one of them at the same time, provided, however, administrative agencies may be created by the General Assembly with such authority and duties as the General Assembly may prescribe. Provisions may be made for judicial review of any finding, order, or judgment of such administrative agencies." Well, you know, the Virginia legislature did not create administrative agencies within each homeowners association authorized to impose fines. And unless there's a delegation pursuant to the separation of powers envisioned by Article 3 of the Virginia Constitution, legislature doesn't have authority to delegate. And that's exactly what we ran into in the next case we're going to talk about, the Foley case out of Rhode Island.
Can I, before we get there, that's in the Virginia Constitution?
Yeah, that's Article 3. Of the Virginia Constitution, Division of Powers, Section 1, Departments to be Distinct.
Okay.
And so the starting point for you folks out there who are running into this is to take a look at your state constitutions, because what you'll probably find is something very similar to the language of the Virginia Constitution. You know, it's basic in American law that we have separation of powers. And legislatures can't give away, can't delegate powers that they don't have. And in the Foley case, what we ran into was the Rhode Island legislature attempted to do that, and they got called on it. Not only did they get called on it, but the Supreme Court of Rhode Island went out of its way to address that issue. And we'll talk about how that happened. Mr. Foley owned a whole bunch of condominiums up in Newport, it looks like, and he was an absentee owner, and he had some tenants in one of his properties that were causing problems, and the association called Osborne Court Condominium fined Mr. Foley for the behavior of his tenants and attempted to non-judicially foreclose on him to collect the fines. See, fining is bad enough. Non-judicial foreclosure to collect fines is where the real money is for these association lawyers.
So basically what you're saying, Frank, is they come up with some silly rule like, oh, you got dust on your mailbox?
Now, who would have a rule like dust on a mailbox? Sure, come on, we gotta be fair to CAI. They wouldn't be around there, you know, having dust on, would they, Sue?
I don't know. I think we're gonna be talking about that later on.
You bet you we're gonna be talking about it.
We're gonna be talking about that.
Yeah, dust on the mailbox.
So some Nimrod, as you would call them, can decide that having dust on your mailbox is a violation of the aesthetics of the neighborhood. And you can have some stalwart volunteer who will go around and give your mailbox the white finger the white glove test. And then they can fine you, and you mean they can take your house away from you for doing that, Frank?
Yes, they can. Yes, they can. And attempts have been made to do just that. That's what was going on with Mr. Foley. Well, anyway, Mr. Foley wound up in the Superior Court of Rhode Island at Newport. And this case is reported at 1999 R.I.SUPER.LEXUS50. Lexus 50. July 26th, 1999. And it is very important because of the preceding case which came down from the Supreme Court of Rhode Island. And the citation to that, again, James Foley versus Osborne Court Condominium et al. This is the Supreme Court of Rhode Island, 724 A period 2D, it's Atlantic 2nd, 436, or 1999, R period, I period, Lexus 55. After Mr. Foley's case had been litigated in the trial court in Rhode Island the first time, it went on appeal to the Supreme Court of Rhode Island. And before the Supreme Court of Rhode Island, Mr. Foley made the argument that the Rhode Island statute empowering associations to impose fines violated the Rhode Island Constitution in that the legislation constituted an unconstitutional delegation of powers by the legislature, and specifically it was unconstitutional delegation of a judicial power by the legislature. Now here's what's unusual about this. Normally, in order to get an appellate court, and certainly a state Supreme Court, to consider an issue at all, the issue has to have been raised and thoroughly litigated at the trial court level. Appellate courts hate to see issues raised before them for the first time. And for good reason. That's the purpose of trial courts. A trial judge should have the opportunity to rule on the issue before it gets appealed. And so 99% of the time, if something comes up on appeal for the first time without having been litigated below, the appellate court will refuse to hear it. There is an excellent argument could be made that Mr. Foley did not properly raise this issue and brief this issue at the trial court level. And the Rhode Island Supreme Court went out of its way to say, we're going to hear this anyway.
Uh-huh.
We're going to hear this because even though it probably wasn't briefed and argued the way it should have been, Mr. Foley mentioned it a couple of times. The other side didn't object when he mentioned it. And that's all we're going to require because this is an important issue.
So they could very well have said, hey, we're not going to take this.
They could have said, you're out of here. It's a well-established principle of law that, you know, appellate courts aren't going to consider issues that are raised, you know, for the first time before us at this level. And but they didn't. They not only did they hear the issue, but they remanded it back to the trial court with instructions to rule on whether the Rhode Island statute that conferred the authority to fine on property owners associations passed muster under the state constitution. The trial court did rule on that issue, and the ruling was the statute violated the Rhode Island constitution because the statute operated as an unconstitutional delegation of a judicial power by the legislature.
So, Frank, what we have here is in Gilman, they actually said fining was an unconstitutional delegation. And in Foley, they're saying that the statute. So, and when we go back to Chadwick's letter where he says, oh, well, you see, that's okay because the legislature then turned around and gave associations the power to fine. Now, Foley comes and says, oh, wait a minute, you can't do that, right?
That's right. Gilman talked about governmental powers. Foley is more specific, and it recognizes that governmental powers are subject to the division of powers, the separation of powers that you learn in Civics 101. And Foley recognized that, wait a minute, this power to fine is not just a governmental power, it's a very specific power. That power belongs to the legislator, to the judicial branch of government, not the legislature. And because it doesn't belong to the legislature, legislature can't go out and authorize somebody else to exercise this power. That's a fundamental concept, and it's a fundamental flaw in this whole CAI-supported scheme of getting fining authority for homeowners associations.
Frank, I think this is the best I've ever understood this whole thing, not being an attorney. I think what you've done today is just really laid it out for us, and I really appreciate that. It makes it very easy to follow from one to the other.
Yeah, and if the listeners, you know, you can start with these two cases that you can download from Shue's website, then you want to go straight to your state constitution, and you want to find the counterpart to Article 3 of the Virginia Constitution, Division of Powers, and then you want to go to the article of your state constitution. In Virginia, it's Article 6. That spells out the power of the judiciary and the functions of the judicial branch of your state government. And what you'll find is that these kangaroo courts that you've got set up in homeowners association are not a part of the state judiciary. And therefore, they've got no business levying fines and even less business being able to collect those fines through non-judicial foreclosure.
I agree with you. We've got a caller on the air with us. Hi, Mika, are you still with us?
Yes, I'm still there.
And were you able to hear the discussion so far?
Yes, I heard the things after the break.
Okay.
And I would like to give you my view of it, if you don't mind.
Okay.
It seems that homeowner associations are fining people based on two different kinds of authorities or two different sources of authority. One is contractual and the other is statutory. The Gilman case related to the contractual authority, the Foley case in Rhode Island related to the statutory. And let me say about these two different things a few words about each one. If I repeat anything that Frank has already said, please excuse me because I couldn't hear the first portion. Before I go to it, I want to tell you that lawyers know about this. They know that this is a tough thing. In my particular case, there are thousands of dollars of claims by the association of fines against me. And they filed a foreclosure action. And yet, the foreclosure is only on assessment, and they don't even mention, they didn't even file a lien for the monetary penalties, which makes you suspect that they know that they will enter here a territory that is that they don't want to.
No, what they're doing, Mika, is what they're doing is when you send in your assessment, I mean, you're a different case, but people who send in their assessment, the money is taken from the top and applied to the fines, right, Frank?
Well, that's what they've been pulling in some places that we've watched them try to get away with it, yeah.
That's what I've been hearing a lot. I mean, this is what they do. They apply the money to the fines.
That's a different issue, I think.
No, because...
How they do it. We're talking about the whole authority to fine altogether. Now, how they apply it is an important issue, but a different one.
But I'm going to what you said, and the issue is that once they've applied this to the fines, then you're in arrears on your assessments, and that's when they go to foreclose. They say, oh, well, you're behind on your assessments, and is it fair to the other, to your neighbors?
They leave it to you to, perhaps if you are educated or your lawyer is educated in it, to challenge the fines.
Well, for people...
Usually they don't, because the claim is about the assessment.
Yeah, for people in that situation, it's important that when you send in your assessment check, you put down there in the memo block that this is for the regular monthly assessment. It's not for fines. It's not for attorney fees. It's not for anything else. This covers the regular assessment. And then if they want to go after you for fines, they've got to go after you separately. They can't just apply your assessment check any way they feel like it.
Right.
We had a situation in our own homeowners association where the trick was, well, you know, we're going to assess these late fees, which, by the way, they weren't authorized to assess. And when you sent in your check, they applied it first to the late fees, and so your regular assessment was never paid in full. And you got further and further behind, and, you know, we finally called their bluff on that, and they had to stop.
Yeah, but you have to know what to look for in order to call their bluff on it.
Yeah.
And, you know, this had been going on for a long time before even we cottoned on to it. And we said no.
Okay, Sue, may I go on?
Yes. We've got a couple more things we want to do, but we'll give you a couple more minutes, Mika.
Okay. These two different authorities, the contractual and the statutory, presumably give the association, either one of them, and especially both of them, presumably give the association an authority to fine. And two different courts found that neither one is proper. But I want to add on it my views on this thing. About the contractual authority. Obviously, the power of the association over the individual homeowner is derived from the contract, the CC&Rs. It's presumed that the homeowner agreed to all these things. Now, if it's based on a contract, contracts do not allow one party to penalize the other. This is common law. There is ample of case law regarding it. Not only this, contracts must have mutuality. Certainly, they cannot allow one party to penalize the other without the same mutual right to the other party. So this is the only thing that contracts may provide for are liquidated damages, but penalties are not liquidated damages. So this is another something that I don't know if it has been ruled upon, but it's another good argument against contractual authority for penalties. In many cases, the contractual authority is very general. Like, for instance, yes, you want to say something? In my case, for instance, my CC&Rs do not say monetary penalties. They say generally that the board may promulgate penalties. It does mention a couple of specific penalties, but they are not monetary penalties. But they take it generally that they can do any penalty. I think that this is all very suspicious, or to say the least. The contract is binding until it's challenged in court. Because if you challenge it in the association, it won't bring you anywhere, as you know. So this is as far as the contractual authority. If you go to the statutory authority, obviously Foley has summed it up in a very, very profound way, that it's the right to, or the the authority to fine cannot be delegated to a private entity. And I would say that the statute cannot give the obligation of the homeowners, the homeowner individually, are not based on statute. They are based on his agreement to receive this obligation.
Well, statute
the statute cannot impose it on him, because then it will violate equal protection under the law. So the statute itself is not sufficient. It can only allow, had it been legal, it can only allow if it can, and then you need it in addition in the contract. But neither is okay.
Mika, I think you're raising some issues that we really don't have time to go into right now. We've got about 2 minutes left.
Okay.
And we want to wrap up. I want to thank you. You can stay on and listen to the rest of the show if you like, or you can catch it on the web.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you, Sue.
Thanks for calling, Mika. I appreciate it. Okay, Frank, you had a couple more things you wanted to go into?
We want to talk about some of these people who are running for office.
Okay, we got some letters. I just want to thank people who wrote in, and we got a letter from Rick Happ, and he said a lot of nice things about you and me, and that. Thank you, Rick. I wish I had time to read them, but I think your question is, why are our leaders so complacent, and where is the public's outrage with so many Americans being abused? And that's what you want to address, right, Frank?
I want to talk about people who are running for office.
Okay.
Who we might want to give some support to.
Okay.
And there is a candidate, looks like this is from Arizona.
Right.
And the candidate's name is Comiskey, C-U-M-M-I-S-K-E-Y, Comiskey 2002 Committee, Andy Hurwitz, H-U-R-W-I-T-Z, Chairman, John Eck, Treasurer. The website, www.comiskey, that's cumiskey.org. Mr. Comiskey is apparently a very strong proponent of homeowners' rights. For those of you in Arizona, I strongly urge you to consider supporting him. For those of you who are not in Arizona, I strongly urge that everybody send this guy $10. If nothing else, it will indicate that this issue has a national following, and any time we get a candidate in any state who is a supporter of homeowners' rights, we ought to do everything that we can to back him up, to make sure he gets into office, and to support him once he gets there, because he's obviously out there, according to what I'm reading on these responses to a questionnaire, he's obviously out there trying to do everything he can to support homeowners in homeowners associations. That includes condominiums and everything else. He appears to be on board for openness of information. He appears on board with rolling back some of these powers that have been given to associations, and protecting the homestead exemption for Arizonans.
So I guess our leaders aren't quite as complacent. I think the fact that you have been calling them and letting them know what's going on, letting them know what you expect of them, it's starting to take effect. It's starting to work, right, Frank?
Yeah, this was Pat Harriff's group out there in Arizona who sent out this questionnaire, and they have gotten several very strong responses from candidates for office. It's clear that people are beginning to get the message, and you know, we've said on this show before that the pendulum has begun to turn towards recognizing the situation of homeowners in these associations as a consumer protection issue. And, you know, if associations want to be businesses, fine. We have consumer protections to protect us against businesses that get out of hand. And if associations want to say that they're quasi-governmental, well, that's fine. We'll give them some oversight by a real government, and we'll get some laws with real teeth in them to go after them when they break those laws, and we'll see how much they like that.
Frank, we did not get to talk about dust on mailboxes. I hope you come back and we'll talk about dusty mailboxes.
We may have to have Colonel Klink call in and read that whole article.
That would be very good because you know how Colonel Klink wants everybody to conform, right?
That's right.
But thanks so much for joining me today, Frank. I know that what you've done has provided a very great service to homeowners across the country and contributed to mailboxes. Investors, people who invest in Maalox, they've gone up. they've become wealthier. But thank you, everybody, for hanging out with us today. I really appreciate you tuning in. And don't forget to check us out on the web, www.onthecommons.com. Stay tuned because On the Commons is here every Saturday. But coming up at 4, it's Night Train with Squire. Then it's Doug with Goffus Rock Experience. Up next, it's Mara Smith with Mo's Show. On the Commons is produced by OTC Multimedia Productions. See y'all next week. Thanks a lot.